Blog Talk Radio.
The 2014 FIFA World Cup Review Show.
And welcome back once again to another exciting edition of the Feuerstein's Fire FIFA World Cup Review Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. This, an incredible finish over in Manaus, Portugal 2, the United States 2, already with me. Eric Krakauer covers Portugal for Soccerly as well as football.com. And if you would like to follow Eric, please do so at his Twitter handle, at BigSoccerHeadNY. So, Eric, a lot of interesting things in this matchup. The United States almost taking it, a 2-1 victory, a big final breath from Portugal as in stoppage time, probably maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds remaining, Varela makes that big equalizer on the cross from Ronaldo. But in your mind, how did you think Portugal played this match?
First of all, hi, it's good to be on again. I think they did a very bad job of applying the system that was hopefully in place, that hopefully Paulo Bento stressed during practice. But ultimately, I think that you saw a very weak Portugal that is very fortunate to even have an opportunity to go to the next round, even though that opportunity is very, very slim. Much better performance by the United States, who managed to counter pretty much everything that Portugal tried to do during those 90 minutes.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you. Because when you saw Jeff Cameron trying to clear that ball in the first half in the fifth minute of the match, and he shanks it, and it goes right to Nani. Nani scores a great goal. And you would figure, because Portugal had their issues with Germany, you thought, okay, Portugal will settle down and they will play their game. But not so. They still kept on giving up the ball. They kept on giving the ball away. And even though they had some good moments, you just didn't see the concentration or the flow from Portugal that basically told you as an American supporter that they're coming to destroy us.
Yeah, look, that goal should have been and it came so early. Actually, let me start over. If you had asked me what was the key thing, and I know it's a little bit of a cliche, the key thing that the Portuguese would have to do in this game, that was to score early. You get a mishap by Cameron, really unfortunate because he had a very solid game other than that little mistake, that rebound, really. You would think that Nani's goal would have calmed down Portugal, and it did to a point, but it did in so far as they kept the ball in their half, possessed it, without really creating any more danger. Yes, Nani had a shot that hit the post later on, and it took an incredible save from Howard to keep Eder's rebound out of the goal, but Portugal never looked incisive. They never looked like they were dynamic. They never looked like they would create a lot of danger, while the U.S. always looked fairly dangerous on the counterattack, especially on the wings, which were open all the time. So it's interesting that everything that could have gone right for Portugal in the beginning did, but they still couldn't get the right state of mind to pull it through.
What do you think about Paulo Bento on how he game planned for this match? Do you think he went the right way, or do you feel that maybe there are certain things that he could have maybe made a different starting 11 that could have been a little bit better than what you saw?
Oh, without a doubt, he made a lot of mistakes. First of all, let's talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. Everybody knows that Ronaldo does not defend. He is a lazy defender. The fact that he is injured, and this was really the first time you saw him be hampered by that injury, either that or he just wasn't at the races. Why not start him up top? Why put Postiga in? Why not start him up top and have Nani and Varela on the wings, which really would have been good for so many reasons. The first one is that if you have Varela on the left side, he is going to help Andre Almeida, the left back or the makeshift left back, because Quintero obviously is out of the World Cup. You would help him close space, and that never happened. And you saw Zuzi over and over again having opportunities to take the ball on the right side and potentially put a good cross in, putting a lot of pressure on the Portuguese center backs. So that was the first error. And then you have to wonder why he decided to not start William right from the get-go. I knew that we were going to see William at some point. I knew it would happen if we went ahead. But Portugal just looked more dangerous when he was on the field because he was so good at recovering the ball, something that Veloso just did not do in this game. So there's a lot to be questioned here, a lot of bad decisions. My last point is if Alves was a question mark for this game and he was dreadful in this game, why not start Neto? Neto is a proven center back, plays for Zenit St. Petersburg. He looked excellent against Ireland. There are just a lot of head scratchers over here.
It looks like it, sounds like it. And now you're questioning the situation. Obviously, you're going to be playing Ghana in your final group stage game, but I guess my question would be this. Do you feel confident that Portugal will get a result and force things between the U.S. and Germany?
No, absolutely not. And look, and even if they did get a result, I don't think you can beat this Ghanaian team by a lot of goals. The United States were a little bit fortunate against them, played very compactly at the back. Germany saw exactly what Ghana can offer when they're attacking and attacking well. I just don't believe that Portugal is there physically. I don't think Portugal is there mentally. I don't think Bento has made the right adjustments or adaptations to get this team playing at its potential. So even if we beat Ghana, and to me that's a very big question, you have to hope that Germany really puts on a beating and decimates the United States, because the goal difference is very large. Ultimately, best case scenario for Portugal, you're looking at Germany beating the U.S. by 3 goals and Portugal beating Ghana by 2. In order for that to pan out, everything has to be aligned just right. The heavens have got to want Portugal to go through. And, you know, the heavens are the only thing that might want Portugal to go through, because the Portuguese players themselves don't seem to want to.
Going back with this match and maybe the last two matches, why in your mind do you think Cristiano Ronaldo was not his best at all? Except for the cross, which was fantastic, but still, you figured with such a world-class player that you have in Ronaldo, who plays for Real Madrid, wins the Champions League, why hasn't he looked this good for Portugal in these last two games?
I think the injury has definitely had an effect. I think psychologically he hasn't been there, and I don't know why. I can't explain it. If you think about the season that this guy had, the most reasonable conclusion or assessment of the situation is that this guy is very, very tired. He played about 60 games this season, played a lot of games, scored a lot of goals, had a lot of pressure on his back, and then he comes into this World Cup with very, very difficult atmosphere, very difficult weather conditions. You know, the heat, the humidity, the pitch was an absolute disaster. I mean, absolute disaster, and it's not the first pitch in this World Cup that has looked so terrible. In Cuiabá, when you saw Belgium playing Russia, same thing, a lot of potholes. When you saw, when you saw Nigeria play against Bosnia, the field looked terrible. So I don't think the conditions were there for Ronaldo. I think he's very tired. I think the injury affected him. And ultimately, that entire environment in the national team camp, especially after Quintero was injured and that horrible defeat, things just weren't there for Portugal to really pull something off here.
I will definitely agree with you. I really believe that's what it is. And missing such great players like Contreras, you can say his name better than I can, that's for sure.
Contreras, yeah.
I mean, that's a big loss. I thought Bruno Alves losing, I thought they lost him, but he played actually, so I think that's a positive. But you could see other injuries popping up as well during the game. Obviously, you had Almeida not out there, and then you had to force a substitution early in the first half with, I think it was Postiga, who had his hamstrings are going in this World Cup. My God. I mean, I don't even know if the fields are in proper shape down in these World Cup stadiums.
No, look, the conditions are not very good. There are a lot of injuries. But you have to give the U.S. a tremendous amount of credit. You know, they're playing in the exact same conditions, and they're managing to pull through. And they were very unfortunate to concede only an incredible, incredible cross from Ronaldo, and an even better diving header for Varela, who seems to be a super sub savior for Portugal. So, you know, the U.S. has to be commended because they managed to deal with everything that was thrown at both teams, and they came out on top. I know that a draw doesn't seem great, but I do think that they could pull something off against Germany.
I think so, too. I think the U.S. has plenty going for them right now. Once again, they haven't won two straight consecutive group matches in a World Cup since the original in 1930 down in Uruguay, where they defeated both Belgium and Paraguay. But still, oh boy, Portugal really looking like, you know Portugal a lot better than I do, but the times I've watched them, and obviously during qualifying, during European Championship tournaments, Portugal is always, to me, one of those teams in Europe that should dominate not just the Confederation, but they should dominate in these tournaments, especially the World Cup, and for some strange reason, they just can't find a way to do it.
Well, look, I mean, Portugal has done incredibly well in the past few years in both the European Championships and the World Cup. What you see with this group, though, is a group that really struggles to play well consistently. You saw that in the qualifiers for the Euro 2012, and then what you did see was that they did very well in the tournament until they faced Spain in the semifinal, and tired, you know, fatigued legs ultimately cost the Portuguese any chance of going into the final. But since then, again, you've seen the qualifying troubles that they've had, coming second in a fairly easy group led by the Russians, who haven't looked great at all in this World Cup. So there's something wrong with this system, and I know that Bantu is going to get a lot of blame for this, but as somebody who is Portuguese and covers Portugal, for a long time there has been this lack of belief within this team, an inferiority complex that prevents them from really doing as well as they can. And I don't know how anybody is going to shake that off. The only one who managed to do so was Scolari, you know, a Brazilian coach who's now in front of the Brazilian outfit. He sort of brought in the very psychological optimism, the sort of optimism that changed the Portuguese psychology that has been missing ever since he was let go of.
Well, you know, I mean, up to this point, I think Paulo Bento, I thought he has done a decent job with this side. Obviously, two results. Maybe you feel this result did go Portugal's way at the end, at the death. Obviously, the German result was not that great. You do get Pepe back for the next game, and I got a funny feeling that Pepe is going to be inserted whether you like it or not after the headbutt during that first game against Germany. I just got a funny feeling Pepe is going to be in there.
I think so, too. You know, I don't think he deserves it because of what he did, especially when there's nothing much to play for. Yes, there is something to play for, but again, chances are slim that they'll qualify out of this group. So I would play other guys who maybe deserve to be on the field only because the starters haven't delivered. But knowing Bento, I doubt there'll be many changes to the first 11, and I think we're just going to see much of the same as we saw today and we saw last Monday.
Out of your opinion, do you think Bento, does he have any more years left on his contract with Portugal as the head coach, or do you think this is it either the Portuguese Federation lets him go or he just decides to leave?
He just signed a new contract a month
mm-hmm.
before the World Cup. So in terms of a contract, he's got 2 more years. He's supposed to prepare the team for the European Championship 2 years from now. And I think that's part of why he brought in some new blood. But he will be getting a lot of pressure from the media. He will be getting a lot of pressure from the Portuguese, the citizens themselves, who have not been behind his appointments, even though he did well in the year 2012, primarily because his public persona is not very likable. He's very stern-faced. His press conferences, which I've had the pleasure to attend on a number of occasions, aren't great. He's not very open about his decisions. He can be very curt. So I think there will be a lot of pressure for him to resign, and he ended up resigning from Sporting. Well, he was fired and resigned. Nobody really knows. It was supposed to be an amicable compromise. But that episode at Sporting Lisbon a few years ago shows that this is a guy who doesn't like to be criticized very often. He doesn't suffer fools gladly, even if those fools have something legitimate to say about his tactical decisions.
Absolutely. Well, Eric, thank you so much. All I can say is good luck against Ghana. I mean, obviously, you've seen what they're capable of against the U.S. and against Germany. And I guess the only thing you can hope for is a positive result, and maybe we'll see what happens at the same time with the U.S. and the Germans. Thank you again, my friend. And once again, everyone, if you want to follow Eric Krakauer on Twitter, his handle is at BigSoccerHeadNY. Thanks a lot, Eric. I'll see you hopefully Friday at Red Bull Arena. We can talk some more.
See you then. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. It's Eric Krakauer. Covers Portugal for Soccerly and football.com. Just one of those. It's unbelievable. One of those situations where you got to say that for Portugal, this was a big moment that they, if you want to say nearly lost, you can probably say that. Or if you feel that it's already over with, maybe you can say that too. But I have to tell you right now, happened today, unbelievable stuff, unbelievable scenes. If you are a fan of the United States, because boy, oh boy, I'm telling you what you just saw. We almost saw history if you are a USA supporter. We almost saw history being made because, you know what? The United States hasn't won 2 consecutive games, or at least 2 games in a group stage, since the first World Cup in 1930, where they defeated Belgium by a final of 3-0 on July 13th, and then, of course, defeating Paraguay on July 17th, 1930, with another 3-0. And that World Cup, Pat Tenaud, who got the 3rd goal against Belgium in the 3-0 victory and got the hat trick against Paraguay, to win that one all by himself, 3-0. McGee and Flory, the other two gentlemen that scored. And boy, oh boy, just, it was almost there. It was on the cusp. Automatic qualification to the second round. Joining me now, Robert Hay. Robert, are you still breathing? Have you finally calmed down? What an epic second half that was. Actually, to be honest, this was probably the best performance I've seen the USA play, even though they were down a goal early in the 5th minute, and then they just nearly get all 3 points till the death, and that was the last play, the last action of the match, as Portugal steals a point away from the U.S.
Yeah, I think I can safely say I'm in a glass case of emotion right now. This was a much better United States that we saw tonight than we saw against Ghana, and I think that shows the toughness of this group, the fact that the United States could play so poorly against Ghana and can come away with a win and play so well against a Portugal team that looked hobbled and looked lost for ideas, but still only get a draw out of it, which, you know, let's not dismiss as a mere nothing. I mean, getting a draw against Ghana is quite impressive. Portugal is quite impressive, but, you know, just the full range of emotions in this one. I was watching the match with a bunch of non-soccer fans and explaining to them throughout what was going on, and they were getting into it, and it was just, you know, something for a match that the eyes of the country was on. This was a good one to show, you know, the emotion and the excitement of soccer.
Absolutely. I mean, so many different emotions going through your veins if you're an American soccer fan. You saw, I mean, the heartbreak, 5 minutes in, Jeff Cameron shanks the clearance. Absolutely shanks the clearance, goes right to Nani. And my last guest who is on, for the Portugal side of things, I mean, that should have calmed them down. The Nani goal to give them the 1-0 lead should have calmed down Portugal. But you saw it. They did not look calm. They did not look confident. They were the ones also giving up the ball easily. They let the ball slip through their boots. And the USA, after allowing the fluke of a goal, which was really a gift, they kept on attacking and attacking, and they just kept on firing shots at the Portuguese net.
Yeah, you know, when I did the pregame with you, Daniel, I had mentioned, you know, Portugal's a wounded team, but I think also I probably should have said, and I should have realized that this Portugal team's an under-pressure team, and you saw that in the first half and probably, you know, pretty much the entire match. This was a team that really needed to come forward with a firm response, but it was going to be tough from the beginning just because of the number of players that were out, primarily due to injury. I mean, you had Bruno Alves, who we had said we were pretty sure was going to be out. He was out there tonight and giving it his all. And, you know, this was a team that was behind the eight ball from the beginning. So I think, you know, part of the reason they were just out of ideas and looked listless was because, I mean, they really just had all this pressure on them and they didn't know how to respond. And so I think that was a key factor. I think Cristiano Ronaldo looked you know, unfortunately, I missed your last guest, but I think he looked pretty poor, to be honest with you. He does not look healthy. He didn't look, besides that last cross, I mean, he was ineffective for parts of the game, a lot more than you'd expect from a Cristiano Ronaldo. So this is a team that was under pressure and didn't look like they were responding well. And really, like you said, that first goal should have been something for them. You know, a veteran team who have a lot of players that have a lot of European experience and top-flight experience to sit there and say, all right, we've got this. We've got this team on the ropes. The United States does not respond well to going down. They have their own history of you know, getting behind and you know, the ghost about that. But, no, you're right. I think they just looked a little bit pressing the entire match, and you know, it was not a good look for them. Although that being said, they very easily could have been up 2-3-0 in the first half if it wasn't for some amazing Tim Howard saves and some good play, you know, by the U.S. defense. So they I think they're going to be kicking themselves a little bit, even though they escaped with their lives in this one. They should be kicking themselves, especially at halftime, about how close they could have come to just putting this one away early.
Yeah, absolutely. But boy, oh boy, you know, when the second half whistle blew and the USA are getting tons of chances on the corner, Graham Zuzi delivering some balls, maybe one or two went too far over the heads of everyone. But, my God, Jermaine Jones, I mean, that one, that shot by Jermaine Jones came out of nowhere. And to be honest with you, when I watched it, I thought, great, it's going to bend behind the far post. And I bet you Beto thought too, and then you heard the twinkling of the twine, and you can't believe you're back in this, because while you know they're pressuring and you're saying, you know, got to get inside the area, got to get in deeper, what a shot by Jermaine Jones, just a one touch and then a bender inside the far post.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jermaine Jones is my man of the match for this one, just for his overall play, both with not only that goal, but creating opportunities and then, you know, defending. He covered up for some mistakes by the United States defense tonight. And, you know, hats off to him for playing a heck of a game. He's a player that I've been tough on for years now, but he's really, really showing some class in this World Cup. That goal was amazing. And one of the benefits of living in 2014 is we get to see, you know, slow motion replay in HD and from so many angles. And on a goal like that, that shows really how amazing that goal was, because if you watch it slowed down, you know, he bends it between a defender, a United States player, and just inside the post. And, you know, as you said, just totally fooled the keeper on that one. I mean, it was a work of beauty. It was something that you'd expect a world-class striker to do. But not Jermaine Jones, but it was just a work of art. And I think that's when the U.S. kind of clicked for them, saying, hey, we're in this. I mean, this is not an impossible task for us. You know, it could have very easily been, you know, the pressure, the pressing on them. We need to get a goal. And that kind of relieved the pressure and said, hey, this is something that we can do. So, you know, great, just absolute beautiful goal by Jermaine Jones. Should be a top 10, SportsCenter top 10 play, probably number one or number two tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely unbelievable. And you know, once again, Jurgen Klinsmann pushes the right buttons. Jurgen Klinsmann pushes the right buttons to bring in certain players. And even, I'll admit it, I thought that this match was screaming for DeAndre Yedlin to come in. And my God, did he do a great job. I mean, he came in for Bedoya. He was in the midfield. He's going up and down the right side. And not just, you know, going to the corner when the USA was up 2-1 to waste some time, which I thought he did a wonderful job. How he was able to cross that ball to help out Zuzi, give it to Clint Dempsey, who basically stomach taps it in past Beto. But still, DeAndre Yedlin, John Brooks, maybe at the time I said he's not ready for prime time. DeAndre Yedlin, I thought, okay, he's got some league matches under his belt in Major League Soccer, so maybe he's not tested on this level. But that's why you bring someone like DeAndre Yedlin and John Brooks. You don't have them start. You have them come off the bench. And the confidence that Klinsmann has in these two players right now coming off the bench, I'm telling you, Robert, I feel like now we are developing into a soccer national team that is to be feared. Maybe I don't want to push it too much, but I feel like Klinsmann can do no wrong right now, because he's got young players that believe in him. They believe in what he is saying. And right now, Brooks, Yedlin, who knows if Julian Green's going to get a shot against the Germans coming off the bench. Even Aaron Johansson might not be ready for, you know, a full 90 in a World Cup. But still, my God, these kids have the confidence of Jurgen Klinsmann, and Jurgen Klinsmann has the confidence in these kids.
Yeah, I'll partially agree with you, partially disagree with you in this. I think Jurgen Klinsmann had an excellent game tonight for the most part. I think, as you said, his substitutions were spot on, except for maybe Omar Gonzalez late in the second half. But, you know, I won't quibble too much on that. I think maybe another defender would have helped maybe with that last goal, but maybe not too much. But I think the DeAndre Yedlin call was spot on. You're absolutely right. You know, late in the game when he brought that ball down into the corner, that looked like a guy who'd been playing in the World Cup for a couple of cycles, not his first cycle, and not somebody who had just, you know, been in MLS a couple of years. Helping out on that second goal, excellent. I mean, I think the key here was he brought a pace that was much needed in this game. And we could tell, you know, we could tell in this game that Portugal was getting gassed, the U.S. was getting gassed, and his introduction just really lit a fire under the U.S. I mean, he was a fresh player who'd come in that nasty heat and just blow by some people. And I think that, and I guess, you know, run back on defense as well, which is just as critical at that point in the game. He was a spot-on substitution. I think at the beginning of the match, I think Klinsmann's tactics were you know, excellent. I'm not just saying that because I predicted that would be the lineup on World Soccer Talk. But, you know, I'll grab the credit where I can. But I think that was the right formation, you know, not to try and force somebody like a Johansson or a Chris Wondolowski up at the beginning of the match, but to, you know, even though Zusi had a rough game, I think, for the most part. I'll say in the first half especially had a rough game, but I think that was the right tactics to use against this Portugal side in the right formation, and it bore fruit for the U.S. Wondolowski, as the second substitution, was a very good call. I think he was the exact right kind of player, a fresh player who is smart, who knows exactly what he is and what he can and can't do, and he's the kind of guy that doesn't mind doing the dirty work. So he's not going to go with the ball and a lead late in the game to try and score that third goal. He's going to go to the corner and he's going to hold it there, and that's exactly what he did. We don't, it's not one of those we need you to score. We need you to score if you're in the right position, and we need you to just play smart, and he's that kind of player. So I think the difference between this game and the last game, much different from Jurgen Klinsmann, and I think much improved, and that's a good sign, I think.
Absolutely. Joining us right now is Kartik Krishnarf, also from World Soccer Talk. And, Kartik, before I ask you a question, courtesy of through Twitter right now on FIFA Media on Twitter, disciplinary decision of FIFA Disciplinary Committee sees Alex Song of Cameroon suspended for three matches for what he did against Mandzukic in the Croatia-Cameroon match, the tomahawk chop fist into the shoulder of Mandzukic of Croatia. So Alex Song not only suspended for the final group stage match in Group A against Brazil, but he'll get additional two tagged along as well. So what do you think about that, Kartik?
Well, I think this just goes along with some of the stupidity of that particular player, Alex Song, that he's demonstrated in his club career and his national team career. He's one of the guys at the top of the list if someone was going to do something that stupid in a match and jeopardize his team or his country. I've seen it with Arsenal all too often. I remember Arsenal fans would always talk about how Arsenal played this pretty football, and I would say, well, we have this one guy that really likes to get stuck in and is an overly aggressive player, one of the worst in the Premier League. They never wanted to hear that from me. So what do I think of it? Yeah, I'm glad FIFA came down on him. It was a shocking challenge, and he was rightfully sent off and he's rightfully suspended for several more matches.
Yep, absolutely. It's absolutely childish. But still, Kartik, we've been talking about this match, obviously. In your eyes, obviously it's tough to give up that late goal to Portugal. But other than that, in your eyes, this performance by the United States, what is your opinion?
It was a good tactical performance. I mean, I felt like a draw was a fair result. It's just a shame the way it came about. Certainly the United States deserved some bad luck after the good luck against Ghana, right? It all kind of, the soccer gods have a way of giving and taking. But I felt like Jurgen Klinsmann got his tactics spot on. I thought the team was set up well. I thought that Jermaine Jones was tremendous again. I thought Kyle Beckerman was very good as well. Fabian Johnson was tremendous. There's something with Michael Bradley in this competition. I don't want to bag on MLS, so maybe I shouldn't say it, but he shouldn't have left Roma. I think he was probably getting higher-level training with the likes of Totti and Stroman and Paniek and all these guys in Roma's midfield. Even if he wasn't getting games, I mean, it seems like he's lacking some degree of match sharpness, if you ask me. I'm surprised he didn't come off in the 70th minute today. So I thought that it was a good performance overall, very poor first 10 or 15 minutes. This is like what happened in the World Cup last time with the United States with the slow start under Bob Bradley. It was corrected more quickly. Jermaine Jones, tremendous. Great goal, but also just tremendous effort. And I felt the other player that really I thought stood out for me today was on the right side. Bedoya did a lot of work, made some smart runs, cleared space for Johnson's overlap, and tracked back well and covered that flank when Johnson was further up the pitch. The understanding between those two guys has really developed, which is probably why we haven't seen Mick Diskerud or another midfielder in that role, because Bedoya is playing so well both ways, two-way player.
Absolutely. Fabian Johnson was dangerous down the right side, bringing up the ball from the back line and able to cross it, giving some several dangerous crosses. And even when he took the ball himself, Robert, he was able to get into the area, either forcing shots to make Beto make big saves or just missing it by the post.
Yeah, I thought he had a pretty good game out there today. You know, I'm trying to think. I can't think of any egregious mistakes. Maybe I'm just forgetting something. But, no, I thought, you know, that's what you expect from a player like him. I mean, we've been expecting a lot from him for a while, ever since that he entered the Nationals team picture, and we wanted to see exactly what he could do. And, you know, this is what we expected, I think, a couple of years ago when we started to see that. It's like, you know, can he be the kind of player who can lock down this position, which has been, you know, troublesome for the U.S.? And can he produce, and can he be a solid player, if not, you know, more than that? And I think, you know, this is a good if you would have told me a couple of years ago that the U.S. Fullbacks would have been, you know, quality and solid in these first two matches, then I would have said I would have bought you a beer. I would have been so excited about it. So I think that's a positive sign for the U.S., and I think a positive for Klinsmann to try and lock down those positions.
Yeah. I mean, just unbelievable stuff going on here. And once again, just to tell Kardec, you know, the Jermaine Jones goal, I have to admit, I thought I was going to go wide. I thought, seriously, I saw it bend, but I'm thinking to myself, okay, look, it's a good shot, but that thing's going wide of the far post. And somehow it you can hear the twinkling of the twine as it goes inside the far post and beats Beto. I mean, a well-placed shot from Jermaine Jones. You never thought you'd get a goal from him, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. And it just goes along with his absolutely outstanding play for the first two matches of this World Cup. And he struck that ball perfectly. He's done everything. I mean, he's been a 10 out of 10. There are very few 10 out of 10 players in this World Cup. I mean, maybe he's the only one, actually. And I'm not talking about for the United States. I'm talking about for all 32 teams. He's been one of the best players in this World Cup. But unfortunately, there are other guys in midfield who aren't playing at the level. And I know you probably, guys probably already covered it. I was on World Soccer Talk's podcast and ran late, and that's why I thought I'd be on.
Don't worry about it. Go ahead. You're here now. It's all that matters. Go ahead.
Yeah. But Michael Bradley's giveaway is unforgivable. Those are the kinds of mistakes that players at a high level don't make, other than Steven Gerrard. He seems to make those mistakes a lot. But high level.
He gets away with it a lot more than others do, though.
Yeah, right. But high-level central midfielders, when you're trying to see out a game, and there's an awareness that goes forward. I mean, if you're in doubt, you either turn and you shield the ball for another 5 to 10 seconds, or before you get dispossessed, or you just play a ball forward and get back into position.
Yeah, I mean,
and he's a coach.
No, you're right.
He's the son of a very good coach. So
it's
inexplicable. And it just goes along with his poor play in the first two matches. That was kind of – we said Jones' goal was a capstone on two outstanding matches, two of the best matches that any player for any country has played in this World Cup. Bradley's giveaway was a capstone on two very poor matches for him.
Yeah. I thought Michael actually had a better match than he did against Ghana. It's just the decision-making towards the end, it lacked at the moment where you thought – history was going to be made. And gentlemen, and Kardec, you were correct, obviously. The first World Cup back in Uruguay in 1930, the USA was in a group with three teams, including themselves, obviously. They were in group four with Paraguay and Belgium, and they defeated Belgium 3-0 on July 13th of 1930, 3-0. July 17th, it was 3-0 again against Paraguay. And that was all on a hat-trick by Patenaude, which, of course, they go into the semifinals as the group winners went into the semifinals. And, of course, the USA loses to Argentina by a final of 6-1. But still, though, you have to say that while they did not win two consecutive, and maybe we're going to be a little bit reserved because the Germans have been known to, you know, ratchet it up when they're – well, I mean, really, their backs are not against the wall, but if they feel like they are, their backs are against the wall, that they will play a lot better and a lot harder. But hopefully, Lowe and Klinsmann, handshake agreement, we don't know. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But Kardec, I got to say that this I mean, the opportunity is still there for the United States to get two wins in a group stage match.
Yeah, right. The U.S. has to play well on Thursday. It's all in front of the U.S. There's an opportunity to win that game. There are tactical issues with Germany that can be exploited. We think about the German mentality, and we think about, which is partly the American mentality now through Jürgen Klinsmann and some of the guys we have that have played at German clubs and come up through German systems. So you think about the German mentality as far as the toughness, the mental fortitude, their ability to do big things in competitions like this. However, there are significant deficiencies in this German side, deficiencies that Ghana exploited, deficiencies that Sweden exploited in qualifying, deficiencies that have been exploited by opposition to Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund in European competition that the United States can. And one of those things is an inability on the flanks, their fullbacks, to deal with pace. You saw what DeAndre Yedlin did today when he came into the match. You've seen what Fabian Johnson can do. We know what DeMarcus Beasley can do. The Germans are familiar with him. I'm a little more familiar with Fabian Johnson. I think the United States has a tremendous opportunity to get something out of this match. I'll also tell you in the midfield, Germany, they have a lot of good attacking midfielders. They're mostly repetitive players. They don't have an out-and-out striker at this point. They can play 90 minutes. Mario Gomez got hurt for Fiorentina earlier in the season, never got back. He would be that guy. They've had to tweak their system. Marco Reus is a guy that has a little more guile in midfield than the guys they have. They lost him. He got injured in that friendly against, I believe, it was Armenia. So there are some serious deficiencies in the German team. I'm not saying the United States is going to win. I'm not even saying the United States is going to get a draw. But if you think that Germany is this overwhelming opposition, like Spain was in the previous World Cup, or some top national teams have been that the United States has run into in the past, you're mistaken. I mean, there is a real possibility the United States could do something in this match. Now, that would also require the United States to play better in the midfield. It would require Michael Bradley to get back to form, and it would also depend on guys playing very, very well. Not having Jozy Altidore is a big deal. We saw that today. It will be a big deal against Germany. And quite frankly, if Jozy Altidore hadn't gotten hurt, I know this. Maybe we shouldn't write the postscript on the United States campaign yet, but if Jozy Altidore hadn't gotten hurt, you just think about how far this United States team could have gone. I think not having him is a – well, and even in that last minute, maybe that's what happens. You play it out with ball to Jozy if you're Michael Bradley, and that's that. Game over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kartik, I was going to throw in one other thing. You know, I'm looking at Twitter right now as we're doing this conversation, and a lot of people are sitting there, you know, making the same joke of essentially, well, you know, the U.S. and Germany should just kick the ball once to kick off each – or twice once each half and then just sit there and stare at it so they can both advance. I think this is something Kartik's brought up before, but I think there's a definite incentive to trying to win this group. I mean, obviously advancing is the key goal, but again, to remind everybody, the second-place team in the U.S.'s group plays probably Belgium. I think Belgium's locked it up at this point or pretty
yep.
close to it.
Yep.
They'll play Belgium in the next round. And Belgium can be pretty darn good if you've been watching this World Cup. The winner of Group G will play probably, I guess, Algeria, I guess, depending on the results, or Russia or South Korea. There's probably a pretty good gap in terms of scariness factor of your next opponent, depending on where you finish in Group G. So obviously all quality teams at this point, but it's much better to finish first in Group G if you have the chance than to finish second. So obviously advancing is the most important goal, but don't leave a chance to win on the table. Don't play too conservatively because it would behoove you to finish first in this group if there's a possibility of that.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Absolutely,
I think the thing is that Belgium has not played well in this tournament, and yet they have 6 points. I mean, I'm just waiting. Maybe this Belgian team is not going to wake up, Robert, but if they do, look out. I mean, they're winning games playing at half speed. We know how good, you know, those of us who watch club football normally know how good these players are. I mean, player for player, they're as good as any team in this competition.
Yeah.
So I would like to avoid them at all costs.
Well, to be honest, guys, if you want later on the show, I have a pre-recorded interview with John Chapman. He covers Belgian League and the national team for World Soccer Magazine. So if you guys want to hang around and listen to what he has to say about Belgium with my little interview a little later on, I'll play that for you. But just to continue on here, Robert, isn't it interesting, as I look up the USA's World Cup records and their opponents, as of right now, they have faced England and Portugal twice. They have faced Ghana three times, Italy three times, and now on Thursday lunch hour here on the East Coast, this will be the third time in the group. Third time they're going to face Germany in the World Cup, Robert. This is a very, very, very interesting territory we're in here right now.
Absolutely, and it shows, you know, the growth of the United States. You can't face these teams multiple times in a World Cup if you're not making the World Cup. So, you know, if nothing else, shows a good sign for the United States, the fact that we are competing in the World Cup and we're continuing to qualify. You know, this is a big picture kind of comment, but you know, you see a lot of these teams from other confederations that are playing opponents for the first time, and you know, we're going on our third round for a lot of these world powers. So, you know, our record against them, depending on the team, is pretty good, and you know, some of the teams you've highlighted, we actually have pretty decent records. So it speaks to the unique nature of U.S. soccer that we still struggle a lot of times with this game, but we have some pretty good records against some of the best in the world.
Absolutely, guys. Here's a question I want to ask you.
I would point out real quick.
Go ahead, Carter. Go ahead.
The 98 World Cup. That game. It started very poorly for us. Jurgen Klinsmann actually scored a goal against the header against Thomas Dooley. Remember that? But there were large portions of that game where we played well, and that game was in Paris, and the crowd kind of got behind us, the French crowd, in those moments we were playing well. 2002, we outplayed them. I remember beating them in the Confederations Cup around that time, Bruce Arena managed team. So we've had some decent success against them. We had a friendly in Gelsenkirchen, that we played in 2006 when Klinsmann was the Germany manager, where we played pretty well against them. So we've had some success against Germany, more than we've had against England or Italy. Well, until this game against Italy last year or 2 years ago, we had no success against Italy. In England, we got the draw in the World Cup because of Robert Green, but otherwise England has been beating us every time we play them in friendlies or competitive matches, regardless of where it is. So Germany actually... historically, the country we've done better against.
Yeah, and we don't forget the result against it at RFK this past year as well.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Well,
sure. Game you were at.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely he was. But anyway, Cardick, it doesn't really matter because only England can beat the U.S. in friendlies, never in a World Cup. So anyway.
That's true. The only two results the U.S. has ever gotten against England have been the two World Cup matches. We've been beaten 9-0, 6-0. I was at a game at Wembley a few years ago when Bradley was the coach. I can't remember what the score was. It was so embarrassing. I was humiliated actually to be there. U.S. regalia. That's how we played against England. But Germany, we tended to play better, even when we've lost.
Yeah, absolutely. But I gotta tell you guys, this has been a hell of a match between Portugal and the U.S. And apparently, my earlier guest, Eric Krekauer, who covers Portugal for Soccerly and football.com, he's not happy with this makeup from Portugal. He thought the Nani goal, and obviously it was a gift from Cameron, was trying to clear it, and he just, I don't know. I mean, obviously he shanked it, and it went right to Nani, and he scored. But he thought that goal, Cardick, was going to calm down the Portuguese, and they just kept on playing nervous.
Yeah, I think that they got overwhelmed in central midfield after about the 20th minute. João Moutinho was very poor in this game, surprisingly, and he's a player that's very highly rated on the European continent. He's at Monaco now, but a player that Tottenham wanted quite badly when André Villas-Boas was their manager. Raul Morelos was not at the races at all today. He was terrible. I felt like Portugal had nothing for them in the midfield. They were very dependent on Cristiano to create, coming down the left wing, and Nani down the right wing. Now, to Nani's credit, we know he's played a lot of football at Manchester United this season. But he looked like a man possessed today. He had some nice touches. He obviously had the goal, but he also had some nice touches and some nice runs. Gave Beasley some problems on that side. But in the center of the park, Portugal was terrible. And their central defense was poor, too. And of course, it was a makeshift central defense for them. Three of their four normal starters on the back line were either injured or suspended. So obviously, they somehow got through this, Portugal. But, I mean, they weren't very good, with the exception of, I would say, two players, Nani and Ronaldo. And then when Varela came on, now this is interesting. Obviously, Varela got the game-tying goal. But when Varela
right.
came on, you saw tactically they were able to move Ronaldo from wing to wing. Nani was able to push inside. They were able to do some more things. You wonder, given what happened for the Portugal in the first game where they were overwhelmed in midfield and they need to get Cristiano more touches. They need to get more strong counterattacking play and ability to cross into the area because their central midfield was so poor in that first game. If maybe they should have started with because I heard actually I think it was either Tommy Smith or Janus on ESPN Radio suggested this before the match, and I thought, you know, that's pretty smart. Start Varela on one wing, start Nani on the other, play Ronaldo in the middle, drop Moutinho. And it may have been a different game. It was better for them once that happened. Granted, it was late in the game. The United States was leading. They were chasing the game. But it looked better for them. So maybe that's something they do against Ghana, if they start with
maybe
Varela
so.
From the beginning.
Maybe so. We'll see what happens in that third match. Of course, one eye will be on USA-Germany. The other eye will be on Portugal and Ghana. Robert, here's an interesting fact from this game, obviously. Originally, second half stoppage time was 4 minutes. And apparently, the Omar Gonzalez substitution for Graham Zuzi, that added the extra minute for five. Now, do you think that's a fair thing for the fourth official to do? Or do you think that's the right thing? Because, let's be honest, and I'm not trying to blame officiating or anything like that, but if that considered to be an additional minute to the four, which obviously made it five, do you think that that's the wrong thing to do and maybe the U.S. should have had at least the win?
I maybe I was confused. I thought they had given five from the beginning and
no, they gave four and then
they
added
you, okay.
five because of the substitution.
Okay. You know, I'm a big believer in honest timekeeping. I mean, you know, if you know that there's a team making a late substitution, then add on that time at the end. I think it's the bigger crime is the, you know, the U.S. play at the end of that game. You know, Michael Bradley giving away the ball.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
In the end, and then Jeff Cameron. No, there's a lot you can blame officials for in this World Cup, a lot. But I don't think this is one of them. I think that the timekeeping was what it was, and the U.S. should have just, to use the American football term, run out the clock on this one and play it a little bit better at the end. And, you know, you got to put it on the U.S. team. And I think we haven't mentioned Jeff Cameron too much. I think he had a very poor match. His errors were pretty blatant. This was a match they just needed to just run out at the end. And they did such a good job until the last couple of minutes. And I think that's the
Someone didn't track Varela. Someone didn't track Varela coming from the midfield, and I'm not quite sure who that is. Or maybe Cameron lost him right away. I mean, good run. We talked about how Varela kind of changed the way Portugal's midfield looked, but he had way too much space. Still, look, we've seen ends of games before. Perfect cross by Cristiano. Perfect cross by
Ronaldo.
Absolutely. Seven times out of ten, the guy ends up missing that, right? He ends up shanking him. It's a great finish from Varela, but someone didn't track him. Cameron picked them up
late.
That's
the problem.
Someone in the midfield, I'm thinking it was, I don't know who it was. It might have been Beckerman. I hate to say that. Someone lost him.
It had to be either Beckerman or it had to be Cameron. It had to be somebody.
It was on the right side.
Somewhere.
So someone.
Somewhere on the right side.
Right.
It could have been Johnson. Johnson might have missed him by accident, too.
Push inside. It might have been Johnson because he might have been coming from the right, left-hand side.
Exactly. Because, I mean, we don't want to really destroy anyone. I mean, obviously Cameron deserves it because he didn't really have a good game today. But still, Fabian Johnson had a great game until that. Maybe he was the one who missed his marker and that allowed Varela to get open for the header and just beat out Beisler. For the header to tie up the game, but boy,
Varela incidentally is a guy that I thought that Bento was close to cutting from the team. It seemed like that in the when he cut down to 23 from 30, that he was a guy that was really on the bubble, even though he's been a pretty good player and I thought was very good for Portugal in the Euros and decent in qualifying. So they're happy they took him now, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable stuff here. Real quick, I want Robert's opinion, and then we'll go to you, Cardiff. Cristiano Ronaldo, two games finished. Good, fair, fugly. Robert.
Fourth option, not healthy. He doesn't look healthy, and I think his moment of brilliance there at the end shows that he doesn't look healthy because he just has looked a little bit slow and a little bit off, you know, his headers, everything. He looks like he's hobbled. I expected to see two, three, four times of brilliance that he showed at the end of this game, and he didn't. So I guess the second option with an addendum that I think he's hurt pretty good.
Carter?
Yeah, I think I go with Robert, option four. He's injured. He didn't look himself. He just doesn't look aggressive. His movement looks poor. His movement looks pretty labored, which is something that's uncharacteristic for Ronaldo. It's so smooth and so seamless and so beautiful to watch typically. But I'm not trying to use too much hyperbole here, but it is. I mean, he's that kind of player. He takes your breath away normally. He has not done that in this World Cup, but he's still Cristiano Ronaldo. Very few other players in the world, when they're at 50%, 60%, whatever he was at, he's not even at 80%, as I think Robert would agree, could deliver the kind of ball he did that saved Portugal's World Cup at least for a few days and has us all in a depressed state here in this country because there are two or three guys in the world that can deliver that ball. Maybe one guy who can deliver that ball when he's at 50%, and that was the guy on the ball, Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I thought see, here's the big dilemma now for Portugal. And once again, we'll go with Robert, then we'll go to Cardiff. Do you feel that Ronaldo is going to play in this final game against Ghana, or do you think Bento's going to give him a rest and maybe sub him in? Robert and then Cardiff.
Oh, I don't think you can keep him off this field at this point. I mean, again, as I said it the last time I think I was on, you know, this is a guy who's been watching Lionel Messi just light up the World Cup and just really make a name for himself. This is a competitive guy. He loves his country. He loves himself. He loves his stats, and I think he's going to go out there. I mean, this team's built around him. I think he's going to go out there even at 60, 50%, whatever he's at, and try and contribute. The key is for Portugal is to figure out how they can work with a hobbled Ronaldo. You know, is that putting him up front? As you all were talking about, is it, you know, limiting his movement? The key is going to be how you can get what you can out of him and what he can do at this point. Even the short turnaround is going to be brutal on him, so I think he might even be even less effective in a more important game. So how do you use him? He's going to be on the field, I think. I don't think you can sub him at this point. He's just too important. So what do you do with him, and how do you get some production out of him?
Carter?
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with Robert. I think that they're in a desperate place. Ghana's going to be hungry. Also, they're going to have to play Ronaldo. Ghana has got everything to play for as well. I mean, this is a 4-4-1-1 group, which is very exciting for neutrals. So it's not exciting for us in the cup. We're very nervous about it. But 4-4-1-1 groups are very rare going to the final group games of World Cups or European Championships, and usually the final day. Something very unexpected happens. Now, of course, the four play each other, so we could see an infamous type draw. But look, I think maybe Cristiano only goes 60 minutes against Ghana, and maybe by that time the Ghanaians are ahead 2-0. And it's very possible, given the way those two teams have played in this World Cup. They're both on 1 point, but Ghana has been much, much, much better than Portugal. But I think he's going to have to give it a go. He's going to have to Bento's going to have to play him, put some trust in him, maybe protect him a little more by starting with Varela and Nani on either wing. Although Ronaldo could then be subject to some abuse from Ghanaian back line and central midfield. Another option may be to put him on the right and have him run at Asamoah, who, as we know, at Juventus this season, I mean, it was great when he was at Udinese, but has not played very much with Juventus and has looked rusty at times in this World Cup, both against the United States and against Germany. That having been said, I mean, he's still a quality player, and Ghana, for the most part, has been pretty good.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you both there, and we'll see what happens. Robert, do you have time to listen to Mr. John Chapman, or do you have to get going?
I actually have to roll off because I've got some
stuff
to do before I unfortunately go to the work week tomorrow. So, but
yes,
thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I always love chatting with you and Kartik, and I'm going to go try and tweet at Earl to stop talking to ESPN personalities.
Yeah, you better let them have it, man. Come on.
Earl's in rare form tonight. Yeah,
guy. But
him and Taylor Twellman. I had to comment, actually. I kind of put him out. I kind of had to comment on Earl to be on his side. So, Earl, if you're listening to the show, great job.
But thanks
man.
Again,
thanks
you guys. Have a good night.
All right, have a good night. It's Robert Hay, of course.
Good night.
Good night. That's Robert Hay, of course. Helps out with World Soccer Talk. He also has his own website, of course, roberthayjr.wordpress.com. Kartik, just take a listen. This is John Chapman, who writes for World Soccer Magazine, and talking about Belgium. So here it goes.
And, of course, reviewing the FIFA World Cup review show here on 40 Scenes Fire. Once again, I'm very excited to have on with me Mr. John Chapman, who covers Belgium for World Soccer Magazine. Thank you again, sir. And that was a heck of a match against Russia.
Yeah, I guess you've got to differentiate between the performance and the result. The
absolutely.
Result was excellent, the performance not so good.
Now, before we get into the result, is it a little bit worrying for you because apparently they haven't scored any goals from their starting 11, even though the substitutes have done a fantastic job getting Belgium on the scoreboard? Does it seem a little worrisome to you that Belgium could be eliminated early? Because we know they're going to the second round, but is it a bit worrisome?
Oh, yeah, it's a big worry, I think. Obviously, the main worry is Romelu Lukaku, who seems completely off form. He's much better, to be honest, when teams come out and Belgium can play on the counter-attack. Then Lukaku can do the job. He did that in Zagreb when they qualified and got two goals. But he's not quite the same when they come up against a mass defense, which they did against Algeria and again in Russia. They don't seem to have the key to the door, so to speak.
That's fine. What do you think Mark Wilmots needs to do? Obviously, you don't have to worry so much about the result in the next match in the group, which would be against South Korea. But still, what do you think Mark Wilmots needs to do to tinker with the starting 11 before they start off in their second round match later in the month?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'm not sure if I've got the answer. The problem is that he's not really got a settled midfield. He tried Chadli and Dembele in the first match. That didn't work. He tried De Bruyne in the center with Fellaini, and that really didn't work today. He could bring in Stephen Defoe. He could try Stephen Defoe against South Korea and see how that goes. But he's really struggling really to get a fixed lineup, and it's a bit late in the day, you know, with a big knockout round coming up.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's not obvious what he can do. Really, he might try Mireles as a striker instead of Lukaku, and give him a run against South Korea, because it's asking a lot for Divock Origi to, you know, become the main striker. He hardly played for Lille. He looked really good, really, really good. But it's asking a lot for a 19-year-old to take on the main striker group.
Isn't that interesting, though? I mean, in this World Cup, we're seeing players who maybe are not ready for this stage, but for some strange reason, they have produced fantastic goals. Obviously, John Brooks for the United States plays in the Bundesliga, and he comes in as a substitute and finds a way to head in a corner to steal 3 points from Ghana. And now you have Divock Origi on a hell of a shot given to him by Eden Hazard. And it just seems like these players, even though they look young, maybe they didn't have a great friendly before this World Cup tournament, and then here they go.
Yeah, that's right. I guess making a general point, you know, substitutes do have an advantage. They're coming on late in the game. Some of the defenses they're playing against are tiring. It's very hot out there. You know, they have a little advantage with fresh legs. But you're right. It's an interesting competition, and some strange things happen.
Absolutely. And obviously, everyone was begging for a goal in this match. And again, about that play, Hazard, who has been a very big player in the Premier League. No, he started off at Chelsea. He's been such a fantastic option for Wilmots going forward to set up plays as well as taking shots of his own. But that's a heck of a play to find Origi right in the middle of the area, and he just goes top shelf.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Hazard was only playing for 10 minutes today. The first 80 minutes, he was invisible. And he's not done a lot for Belgium in his career so far. Not scored as many goals as he should. He's not made as many as he should. But those 10 minutes, you know, he was awarded man of the match, which says something about the match, really. But, yeah, he's a great player. I just wish he would do it more often and for longer periods for Belgium. I thought Dries Mertens had an excellent first half. From Belgium, he was good. And Axel Witsel, you know, he was as consistent as always. I think I saw a stat say in the first half he had 100% of his passes were clean, went to the his colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. But obviously, after their final group stage match, that's going to be coming up on Thursday, you will face either Group H winner or Group H runner-up, depending on who is going to finish in first or second in Group G. I mean, Germany's still up for grabs. The United States could win the group after they play Portugal today, or Portugal will still remain. It could be Ghana. Out of all the four right now, because it looks like all four are still in play, which side from Group G do you think Belgium would rather face?
Oh, hell of a question. None of them would be easy, I don't think. Although the advantage would be, I think all four teams would probably come out and attack Belgium. I don't think any of them are defensive-minded, which would give Belgium more opportunities to counter on the break, where they're better, to be honest. Their best performances in the qualifiers were away in Serbia and Croatia, when the team came at them and they picked them off. Their performances in Brussels were never too good, to be honest, because they tended to play against packed defenses. Who would they rather play against? Good-feeling Ghana?
Mm-hmm.
Good-feeling.
That's fine. I mean, Ghana's a good test, to be honest. A very cagey, very wiry type of team. Sometimes they like to lull you into the sleep, and then when they're ready to pounce, they'll let you have it. I've seen it twice already with the U.S. national team, obviously. They've handled the U.S. pretty good until this upcoming World Cup in the first game. But still, I absolutely agree with you. I think Ghana would be a very good opponent, probably, for this Belgian side. We talk so much about certain teams that have, maybe do they deserve their seeding? Do they deserve their ranking with FIFA in the world rankings? Obviously, Belgium, to me, seems like, while their problems at the moment are starting matches, but finishing them is always a different story, obviously. Do you feel maybe that the ranking so far is worth it for Belgium at this moment?
Yeah, well, I think, what are they, ranked 12th at the moment?
Mm-hmm, yep.
12th? So, yeah, I think that's okay. That's a fair ranking. They're not better than that. They're not worse than that. I think they can perform much better than they have so far in the World Cup, which is good, you know. Often in the World Cup, you get teams that start badly and then go through and improve as they go along. It's not always the teams that look very good in the group stages that win the World Cup. You know?
Right. Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And right now, we're seeing Algeria put a fourth goal past South Korea, so it looks like right now Belgium might have an easier time now that South Korea is going to – looks like it's going to be officially elimination for South Korea. But I will say this, Don't count them out, because I know they're, even though obviously they'll be eliminated, they'll be playing for pride, but I think South Korea will give Belgium a very stern test in the final group stage match.
Well, I think any team that packs their defense will give Belgium a stern test. They don't seem to have the creative nous to open up those packed defenses, which is a worry.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with you. Finally, how exciting has this World Cup been for you? Because there's been a few, maybe one or two matches that have been so-so, but to me, everything has been fantastic.
Oh, I would agree. I think it's the best World Cup in the last, 30 years or something. It's fantastic. It's just a pity that my team, if you like, Belgium, haven't really been to the party, They've been okay the last 10, 15 minutes. But that's not good enough, obviously. But the World Cup and the competition, fantastic. And congratulations on the U.S. They're playing well, yeah?
Ah, they are. So far, so good. We'll see what happens against Portugal. Even a wounded lion is still dangerous. That's for sure.
Excellent.
That's
okay,
for sure.
Nice talking to you again.
You too, John. Thank you for the time. Have a good day.
Cheers.
John Chapman from World Soccer. So, Kardik, your opinion about his thoughts of Belgium.
Yeah, I think Belgium's been largely underwhelming in this tournament. We talk about the amount of quality they have. But they haven't performed at the level we thought they would. They have so many top players, so many guys that are outstanding players at the European club level. And I've done a couple shows now in the last 2 hours since the final kick. So I'm trying to remember if I mentioned it on this show earlier or not, but that they have players – no, it was on another show, actually. It was pointed out to me by Warren Jones, our former colleague at CSRN, that when I rave about the players Belgium has on paper, that we are in a position where a lot of those guys, Hazard and company, exempted because they're top players on top clubs. They're the best players, top three players on Chelsea and Manchester City. But the rest of the guys are small pond. Big fish guys. I mean, they're guys like Kevin Morales, who's top player at Everton. Lukaku was at West Brom last year. At Everton this year, obviously, Mertens is at Napoli. They're not at the biggest clubs, so maybe we've overrated some of these guys. Now, I'm not sure about that because I still look at the side; they're loaded just based on watching European club football. But something's not clicking. Lukaku hasn't played well. I think not having Benteke as an option, he got injured, obviously, towards the end of Villa's season when they were fighting relegation, is a bad one. That's really hurting them right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the only good thing about Belgium would have to be Courtois. I mean, he won La Liga with Atletico Madrid, on loan still, from Chelsea, unless he's already transferred over. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I should say Courtois is the third guy, right, that Warren mentioned. Courtois, Hazard, company. They're big-time players at big-time clubs.
Yeah.
The rest of the guys are big-time players at smaller clubs.
True. But still, Lukaku's in the Premier League, isn't he? I mean, he's still, the Premier League.
Yeah, no.
You would like to think that he's doing well in the Premier League, obviously. I don't know what number team now he's on that he's on loan with. For some strange reason, he's not bringing them both in.
Right. He was on Everton this past year, as you know, and West Brom the year before, but he's not performing at that level that we expected from De Bruyne. As a player that I liked a lot, I thought Jose Mourinho was short with him at Chelsea and had not given him a fair chance, and he went back to the Bundesliga and has not played well in this tournament. So
yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's just one of those things.
Didn't play well. Van Boyten's an older player. I mean, I remember when he was at Manchester City a decade ago. He's still a strong professional. Same thing with company. But, I mean, we're naming all these Belgian players. We can probably – I can rattle off more Belgian players off the top of my head and the kind of years they had in European club football than any other team in this competition other than the United States, which I follow, which, I'm an American. So they
absolutely
should be playing better just based on being a neutral, and I'm rattling off the names I'm naming. Belgium should be as good as anyone in this tournament. They haven't been, but guess what? They have 6 points. So
exactly.
When Belgium starts to play well, they might be unbeatable. I mean, I just look at the squad. Unless I've overrated every single one of those guys for several seasons now, But they're winning. Belgium beat Russia today, right? They shouldn't have. They beat Algeria. They shouldn't
they,
have.
They beat, yep.
But they have 6 points. So once they get going, you could make the same argument about Argentina. I happen to think Belgium has a better team than Argentina. That Argentina and Belgium, when they get going, are going to be really difficult to beat. We'll see. The United States might play Belgium in the second round. I mean, we hold on today. We're probably facing Algeria or Russia instead.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so we're going to probably face a Belgian team, and that's unfortunately, if Jeff Cameron has the kind of game he did today, that's when Belgium will wake up and put three or four past
yeah.
us. So he better get it together. He better get it together for Germany, otherwise we won't have a game against Belgium.
Exactly, and that's how tight it is now. That's how tight it is. With this result by the U.S., and like we all said, we all thought it was going to be a draw. It should have been a win. It was not. Became a draw at the death. But once again, you know, this is why everyone loves the World Cup, and, you know, this has been probably the best World Cup we've seen probably since what? I mean, not as a U.S. fan, what, since 2002 maybe? Maybe...
2002. For the U.S. fan, yeah, 2002. For in general... This is the best World Cup at least since 2002, but that was a World Cup that was oddly timed for both us and the European continent. This is certainly the best World Cup since, people said like Italian 90 was dour, USA 94 was pretty dour. Maybe going back to Mexico, 86, maybe going back to the 1978 World Cup. This has been, I think the 2002 World Cup was very good too. So it's definitely... And if we talk about international tournaments, we're not just talking about World Cups. We're talking about Euros, Copa Americas, Gold Cup, Asian Cups. This is the best tournament in world football since maybe the Euro 2000 tournament. Maybe there was a very good Copa America, which the U.S. actually had made a deep run in 1995. That was considered one of the best tournaments. But we're talking historic stuff. I mean, we're talking about the best tournament at least in a decade.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you there. I definitely agree with you, Cardick. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a sad night for us, but credit to
it is. Yeah. Yeah. It really is a sad night for us, but still, though, destiny is still in the U.S.'s hands, and who knows? Maybe Lowe and Klinsmann will have a secret dinner, and they'll both say to both their sides, you know, we both want the same thing. Let's just both advance on a draw. So you never know. I'm not considering match fixing, but you know, if Joachim Löw and Jurgen Klinsmann, they're best buddies, if they want to have a little private meeting with each other, let them. It's okay. They're best buddies. So anyway, Algeria gets their first win in a World Cup group stage match since the 1982 World Cup, and they put three past South Korea in the first half. South Korea tried to pull a couple back, but it was too little too late. Algeria advances 4-2. What do you make of this Algerian team? Do you think that they have an opportunity now to get out of the group stage with this performance?
Yeah, I think Algeria, I thought going into the last tournament they were going to be a strong one. 2010, I was kind of concerned about being drawn into their group, if you remember then. They didn't perform at that tournament. They had a lot of injuries. They had a lot of guys that were kind of green at the international level. I should say green because that's the color of the country too, right? But,
we know what you mean.
But they had a lot of guys that weren't seasoned at the international level. Now what we're seeing with Algeria is a team that is more seasoned at the international level. They've done okay in Cup of African Nations. Not really great, but they've done okay. They've been through the World Cup before. They have a lot of guys that have come out of the French youth system, either the youth system from the French national team where they played for the U21s and the U18s, or the youth system of French clubs, and some of the top ones, Lille, Lens, and others like that, Lyon. And they have melded a good unit together, a positive unit, a unit that attacks. A unit that can defend well, too, although we didn't see it. I mean, they defended well when they needed to today, right? I mean, they were already three goals to the good when they were. They were already three goals to the good, actually, every time they conceded. Mm-hmm. So they can defend well. They defended well against Belgium for 70 minutes. And I think they're very strong. This tournament, you know, you
you like certain teams in the way they play, and you don't like certain teams in the way they play. And even as a neutral, you have to say there's a winner-take-all match, Algeria-Russia coming up. Fabio Capello has been, much like he did to England, very negative, very dour. His teams, you don't want to watch them. I really don't want them advancing. Nothing against Russia or the Russian players or the Russian people, but it's against the manager, Fabio Capello, who, much like he did at Real Madrid, this is a manager that was sacked at Real Madrid after winning the La Liga title. Why would you sack a title winner? It's unprecedented. But the board at Real Madrid said, we're happy we're winning, but you can't put 10 guys behind the ball. We're Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
Same thing happened with England. We saw England in the last World Cup. We saw them in the qualifiers leading up to the Euros before he resigned and was replaced by Hodgson, who's been far more positive. Look, England is going out of this World Cup. Let me just give you this story, since we're talking about Algeria and Russia. England is going out of this World Cup. There are tabloids panning the English team, but there are other people, respected journalists in England, saying, you know what? We've been eliminated. It was better to get eliminated and play the way we did under Roy Hodgson, being very positive, bloodletting youngsters, giving it a go with guys like Raheem Sterling, than playing like we did under Capello, which was scared, which was tentative, which was dour, and ultimately kind of embarrassing for our country. And I think Russia is in that same position. I hope Algeria puts them out of their misery and beats them in that final group game. Or gets a draw. Actually, Algeria only needs a draw, right? Russia has to win. So hopefully Algeria gets a result, because Algeria has been a positive side. They've been a good side to watch, and I think it would be a good thing for the tournament if they advance rather than Russia.
Why does Capello play negative tactics? I don't understand why he has to play negative tactics.
He's done it everywhere he's been. I mean, it's just – that's him. He did it at Roma, too. I mean, this is why people I've talked to, like my good friend Simon Evans, who covered Capello in Italy, says the guy is just – he's like – I can't remember if he used the term caveman or prehistoric, but he used some kind of term like that with me. Like, this is the kind of, you know, 19th century tactics, basically. You know, he's very disciplined. His camps are like boot camps. It's probably why Russia's team is doesn't have the energy they need late in games. We knew that about England last time. I mean, England was completely out of gas after 70 minutes against the United States. You know, looking back, we should have taken that game, but we didn't.
That's why Rob Green had the howler.
Rob Green had the howler, and we were 1-1, but Josie had a great chance to win the game for us, which he didn't take because England was dead. And you're seeing the same thing with Russia, whereas Algeria, you know, they buzzed all over the pitch. They're going to be they could run at Russia. See, here's the thing. If Algeria scores early in that game, it's over, because Russia, I mean, they're playing this negative style. The whole idea, I think, of the way Capello's playing is to just get the 0-0 in, like, the 70th minute and then let it go. And that's just not – in a World Cup that has been so exciting, and you don't see Catenaccio, and you don't see these kinds of negative things anymore. That is so distressing to see the way that they have chosen to play Russia. The Russian Federation has to make a decision. You know, they extended Capello's contract through 2018. They don't have to qualify for the next World Cup. I mean, they have to qualify for the Euros in France, but they don't have to qualify for the next World Cup. They will be in that World Cup because they're the host. Capello has been given a contract through that end of that World Cup, and he's supposed to be the guy to take them into the World Cup. They might want to reconsider that based on what we've seen. Now, maybe he's good, like England beat Slovenia in the last game of the last World Cup, and then, you know, we got the goal against Algeria and we went through because of that. But maybe like that, we're going to see Capello get a 1-0 like he did for England against Slovenia in a horrible match, get a 1-0 against Algeria in advance, and then get killed in the knockout stages. Because what will happen is that Russia will probably play Germany and get beat 4-0. Let's be honest about it. What's going to happen. Just like England played Germany under Capello in that knockout season. There was a controversy about the Lampard goal, right? The goal line, and that was unfortunate.
Right.
But let's just face it. I mean, Germany tore up the pieces. Embarrassed them because Capello started negative, and Podolski scored within like 10 minutes, and then there was no answer. Then, you know, once you take a team which is negative out of that shell, you're going to have channels to run into. So this is another thing I think about Klinsmann. Klinsmann doesn't manage that way, which is why a lot of American fans, as much as we love Bob Bradley and, you know, we kind of like Bruce Arena, not really love them. We could never be loved the way Bradley was. Klinsmann's very refreshing. You know, he's not going to play that way. He's not going to sit deep. I mean, we could have sat deep this whole game and played for a 0-0, knowing
yeah.
the point was good for us. We didn't do that.
Right.
We tried to win. We almost did win.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, my feeling is this. I just want – if we're going to get an American coach that's going to come in with, you know, refreshing style, you know, a better way to attack, because obviously the only way to win these games is to score goals. We all know that.
Right.
I just want to see myself personally, I want to see a good game plan. I want to see the boys acting like, okay, we trust the coach and off we go. Did I trust Bruce Arena back in those days? Yes. Did I feel that he got railroaded by some of the players that he brought into the squad in 2006? Opinion, I think he got railroaded by, you know, DeMarcus Beasley and a few others. And I felt that's not fair and that's not right. This is a guy that gave you the opportunity to go play for the national team, and I felt at the time that's not what you got to do. Now, you know, did Bruce change his tactics a little bit? Possibly. But at the same time, you know, you don't rock the boat. You know what I mean? You don't rock the boat. And Bruce Arena should be heralded for putting us into that position after 2002 to be a strong national team, not just from within CONCACAF, but to be feared from out the world. Did I feel Bob Bradley got shortchanged after the World Cup in 2010? You know what? A little bit, but I understood why it had to happen.
Yeah, I think what bothered me about the way the Bradley sacking was handled was he was retained after the World Cup. We didn't play well in the rest of 2010. We did not play well in 2011. We got beat in that Gold Cup final. Blew a 2-0 lead.
Yeah.
They scored four goals.
2-0.
Right? But then Gulati waited a month to sack him. He waited a month after that game. I mean, he was a dead man walking for a month. And Gulati had kind of mishandled the sacking of Arena also. Now, that was also because he, you know, and the hiring after Arena, the whole time he wanted Klinsmann. He wanted Klinsmann in 2006, couldn't get him. Wanted him in 2010, couldn't get him. Wanted him in 2011, got him. But it's just, it messed up. Just from a professional standpoint, the coaching, you know, the just the way things were handled. But just to finish your point, if there were two guys right now in Major League Soccer, American coaches that I think can actually succeed Klinsmann after the 2018 World Cup, assuming Jurgen leaves them, Jurgen's not leaving until then. Maybe
right.
he stays longer. I think Caleb Porter's one, and I think the other would be Peter Vermees. I've heard Jason Kreis's name. I don't think he's positive enough. You know, we talk about positivity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
or
he's,
maybe he feels. Yeah, you don't think he's ready for it. That would be my only concern. With Kreis, with Jason Kreis. I think
I think Jason Kreis has been a manager that has done well because he's had a good. We'll see what happens at NYCFC. He had a good support system at Salt Lake, a very good management. And Garth Lagerwey, who's his buddy from Duke, a guy that was able to find a lot of good good diamond-in-the-rough type players. I think he's okay, but I'm not sure if he's national team coach level. I think Caleb Porter could be. And the other guy I think that could be, as I said, is Peter Vermees.
I agree with that.
Both of those guys play similar styles to Klinsmann, so it would be seamless. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It will be almost seamless,
but at least there might be a few tweaks here and there with the national team. I mean, I think Caleb Porter or Peter Vermees would be a better position or a better pick when Jurgen Klinsmann decides to leave after 2018. We'll see what happens. But Cardiff, boy, oh boy, another wonderful day here in the World Cup land. Obviously, a little disappointment at the end against Portugal, but I think our players have proven they're not afraid of anybody. They believe in what Klinsmann tells them, and they believe as they give great results on the pitch. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I think it's unfortunate that we dropped 2 points late, not all the points, but that it was another game effort by the United States. Credit to Portugal, credit to Varela and to Ronaldo. Ghana is going to be strong against Portugal, so the U.S. needs to go out and get a point. Germany can be had for a point, okay? This German team is not as strong as everyone thinks they are. I'm not saying they're weak. I'm not saying the U.S. will get a point or will win, but for the reasons I outlined earlier, Germany can the United States can get a point and get the 5 points, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there.
For Robert Hedges, that's what they need to draw to get out.
Yeah, absolutely. A draw is all they need. Hopefully, it will be a draw. Thanks to Carter Krishnire once again. Thanks to Robert Hay. Thanks to Eric Krakauer. And, of course, to John Chapman of World Soccer Magazine. This is Daniel Feuerstein. Have a good night. Talk to you two times, 2 o'clock, 6 o'clock. The group stage madness will end these next 4 days. Bye-bye for now, everybody. Thanks for listening.